And coming up next on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, special 6:15 to 7:15 hour-long show on psychiatric abuse with call-in attorney Jeff Lustman and two activists from the Los Angeles-San Diego area, Ned Parker and Mona Montgomery. Stay tuned.
I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. His life was held forfeit for defying the throne. The cause is noble. He died for what's right, but it can't ease the pain in a home that's so lonely at night. I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. They call him an outlaw. His location's unknown. The last time I saw him, took the few pounds I had and left me this baby who'll not know her dad. I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. My love's bound to wither behind barbed wire and stone. They say he gets my letters, but I've not much to write. And our bed seems so large now, so empty at night. And I curse the injustice that keeps us apart. How could it have been wrong to surrender my heart? Will our children be heroes and widows in time? I'd gladly take his place, but would he take mine? I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. And I worked at the two jobs till our babies were grown. How I grieve at the same fate awaits them as well. My love rests in peace now, and I live in hell. And I curse the injustice that keeps us apart. How could it have been wrong to surrender my heart? Will our children be and widows in time? I'd gladly take his place, but who would take mine?
And that's Ann Feeney, I Married a Hero, from a, 15-year-ago album. It was 16 years ago. But I've heard it recently, and I played it recently. From the album, There's a Whole Lot More of Us Than They Think. And I've got it on cassette, maybe out on CD now. I recommend it. Ann Feeney. So, welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is a two-hour show covering, often a lot of local issues, play a lot of tapes from street interviews. Today, as I mentioned before, in about 10 minutes, I'm hoping to get a call from Jeff Lustman, who is an attorney in Southern California. You may have heard him before because he called in when we had on the air an Alaska anti-psychiatric attorney, I should say an attorney concerned with psychiatric abuses against the institutional psychiatry, which allows for forced incarceration, forced hospitalization, and particularly forced drugging. He called in and gave a kind of an update from the LA-San Diego area and wanted to do a longer piece, and I decided to oblige him because he sounded very interesting, and he rounded up some of his associates down there, and we're going to have them on the air, hopefully, in about 10 minutes. So for those who are interested in following, kind of briefing yourself on some of this, mindfreedom.org, I believe, is the website that Jeff does a lot of work with. It's concerned with, it has a lot of stuff on dealing with forced drugging and forced incarceration protests against electroshock, against Bush's policy, which they describe as the shrinking of America, corruption and conflict of interest in the psychiatric drug industry, drug screening, feminist perspectives on mental health screening. That's at www.mindfreedom.org, in case you want to check in on that. You can also follow this show if you want to make comments and pass on suggestions and questions and just whatever. If you jump on the chat room, pagesincolor.com, all one word, all small letters, pagesincolor.com, and you can follow. And actually, I will try to follow you. I don't always do the best job on that. I don't see anybody on the chat room but me right now. But if you do get on the chat room, I'll try to pass on your comments. Or you can call in the open phone line here. And we got two of them now, one's for the guests, and I'm waiting for them on that line. But the line that you can use as a caller is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC. Or indeed, we are Free Radio Santa Cruz. So think about that. If you want to leave a comment off air, or if you're trying to arrange some information to get out on this show, or perhaps you want to be a guest, or perhaps you have some terrorist threats to make, but you don't prefer to make publicly, you can do that at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my off-air number. Also, my voicemail. You can get a kind of a lengthy message on what's been cooking in the last, well, it's about a month old now, or half a month old, but the message is still relevant. In case you want to pick up on HUFF activities, HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a volunteer local group of housed and homeless people who get together and scheme on how to get back civil rights and how to expand civil rights for people who are really at the bottom of the totem pole, folks outside, folks on the street, whose very survival is considered to be at the option of merchants, depending on, you know, how business worthy they seem, that is, the homeless people seem at the moment, what the whims of the politicians in the business community is, and whether the police decide they want to arrest them or ignore them, and so forth and so on. We have in Santa Cruz, in case anybody out there has forgotten, a sleeping van, yes. No sleeping after 11 o'clock at night if you're outside or in a vehicle, even if the vehicle is legally parked on any public property and on much private property. You're in a situation here, as I endlessly repeat, but it bears repeating, where there's shelter, emergency shelter at night under the city's ISSP, Interface Satellite Shelter Program, for less than 40, count them, 40 people. And we have 1,500, that's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits. And probably growing. And probably, that estimate is probably outdated. It's a major crisis here, and it looks like I got a phone call. So let's roll with that, and we'll see what we got here. Hi, I hope you're on Free Radio. Can you hear me? Hello? Are you there? Hello? Are you there? Let's see. We got a dial tone, and I can't hear you, caller, if you're calling in. Say something if you can hear me. Okay. It looks like they hung up. I'm going to suggest, probably going to try again. Wait, I have this problem. I have occasionally have a phone problem here, and there's definitely a broadcaster problem because I don't know what to do when we have these sorts of problems. So bear with me because I think these are the callers we want to talk to, and hopefully they'll try again. And we'll see what's cooking here. Who knows? While waiting for the caller to call back, I'm going to play a little something that I believe I played before, but I think it really bears playing again. Folks out there are naturally pleased that there's a new medical marijuana club opening in Northern California, this time in Santa Cruz, finally, after 5 years, and the city's repressive laws have prevented that from happening. We have a Greenway Club, which should be opening shortly. Lisa Mullinow has occasionally come on the show to give us progress reports. She's the guiding genius and green goddess behind it. But the real question remains, for poor people getting access to a written doctor's recommendation, although either a written or an oral recommendation for medical marijuana will do, is problematic, difficult to do. It also costs money. And here's a discussion a bit about that and a bit about other medical concerns that homeless people have from a man who, with his wife, is houseless on the streets. He showed up at a Huff meeting about a month ago, and I have played this before. I want to play it again while I'm hoping we can get our phones straightened out, and we'll see if that happens. So stay with us.
Okay, Bill, you're saying that your partner, Chris, tried to get on MediCruise. Talk about that a little bit.
My wife needed to get on MediCruise for various things. And there's a big list of on the wall of what MediCruise doesn't cover. I could go down there and get you the list right now, but it's probably about 20 or 30 items. And unless you're in almost dire straits bleeding, they're not going to cover it. They're not going to do a female examination. They're not going to do infections. They're not going to do anything for psychological or recommendations too. And it's if you can't get Medi-Cal, because you're not eligible for Medi-Cal, they say, well, go get MediCruise. And then MediCruise says, well, you're not eligible because you don't have something we cover. And there's a lot of poor people out there that just won't even go down and bother because they know that MediCruise is going to deny them. It's a joke.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm hoping that we actually can get our callers on the line. Are you there, callers? Can you hear me? Oh, boy. Wait a minute. Can you hear me? Hello? Having problems here. I think they're going to call back. We are going to do this. Don't give up hope. At least I'm not going to give up hope. Again, if you want to call in yourself and ask the callers any questions, the caller's line, and I think that line is working fairly well, is 427-3772. Hoping we can get the long distance. Actually, it's not our long distance. We're actually, the folks down in LA are footing the bill for this. Maybe what I should do is optimistically try to introduce them to you before they even show up, because if they got through to me once, at least kind of off broadcast, but here in the studio, I'm hoping they can get through to us again. Jeff Lustman is going to be one of our guests. He's actually the guy who's arranged this, as I mentioned before. He sits on the board of mindfreedom.org. Ned Parker is an activist with Scientology, but also a group that's concerned with civil rights for psychiatric activists, psychiatrically confiscated individuals, folks who are suffering from psychiatric abuses. And Mona Montgomery is an attorney doing a lawsuit to free people from a psychiatric lockup, I believe, assuming they can get back to me, assuming I can handle this board, which I seem to be having a little bit of trouble with today, but I'm going to keep working on it. That last piece I played for you, which was a brief discussion with Bill, talking about his wife Chris and problems getting on Metacruise, actually that's a later segment. He earlier talked about the difficulties of getting medical marijuana if you're poor, that you not only have to get a doctor's recommendation initially, then go in and get a card, but then you have to go to their special doctor and get another recommendation. And I think I haven't heard any confirmation on that, but it sounded pretty bad, and I'm hoping that this new club, when it opens, will find some way around this, that we're going to find some way to actually access medical marijuana for poor people here in Santa Cruz. And it's nice there's actually a club opening for anybody in Santa Cruz. And, of course, the Wham Fest is happening this weekend, for those of you who are interested. I'll give you the stats on that in a moment as to when and where that's happening as I dash to indymedia.org, a good website in spite of its banning of activist Becky Johnson, who's my co-producer and also a good writer on homeless issues, who has disagreements with Indie Media on other issues, and so they ban her completely. Not good, and I continue to mention it in the hopes that things will change. But Indie Media's got lots of good information otherwise, and I'm kind of reviewing it now to check out the Wham situation. They've got a calendar of events on Indie Media, which is at santacruz.indiemedia.org, for those of you who haven't checked before. And let's see. They don't mention the Wham event on their calendar. Well, somebody does, I'm sure. So perhaps if I go to the Wham website, I can get some information on that. Well, I'm hoping to get a call back. Maybe they've run out of funding down there, and they're not calling back for that reason. Wham's had some pretty broad publicity. They have what's called the Wham Fest every year, and they're probably mentioning it. Yeah, here we are on the Wham website. Wham, of course, is Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, and it's September 10th, 2005, is their third annual Wham Fest, Santa Cruz's only medical marijuana and hemp festival. On September 9th, they're going to have Paul Krasner talking, but of course, I think you have to pay for that one, $40 per person the night before. So if you want to kick down $40, you can always do that. Hopefully, as I've said before, Wham will continue to pressure the city to change its medical marijuana zoning laws that, in essence, has stopped medical marijuana clubs from opening. And I'm glad we have the current club, but other clubs, I mean, this is a, though we're a city of 50,000 or 55,000, there were, 2, 3, 4,000 patients in the county area, I think around 1998, 99, 2000, when the other clubs were, in essence, closed down by the Rotkin-Fitzmaurice zoning law. Rotkin and Fitzmaurice are city council members. Rotkin is now the mayor. They're both still sitting on the Santa Cruz City Council. And they both have so far evidenced no inclination to change the medical marijuana law in any meaningful way by setting up hearings or getting public input or putting the issue on the agenda or making any specific public statements. Rotkin has made a few vague statements about it, but nothing specific. Boy, maybe I can get my producer to give a call to the down to Jeff to see if he's actually going to be coming on here, because I'd really love to have him on the air. I will see what I can do with that and get some action there. In case you want to get on the air for some reason, we do have a caller on the other line. Let's see what we got coming in here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hi, hope.
Is this the? Are you guys live right now?
Yes, we are.
What's that?
Yes, sir.
So you're talking about Wham right now?
Talking about, the upcoming Wham Fest.
Yeah, it's on the 11th, and I've been considering contacting you.
Ooh, on the 11th.
I'm an organization pretty much, very much like Wham.
Uh-huh.
And I was essentially busted after calling the authorities on June 13th.
Wait a minute.
My arraignment was yesterday.
Sorry, say this one more time. I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Go ahead.
That the Wham Fest is on the 11th.
Not on the 10th.
Right, it's on the 11th. They put it on the 10th inside of the Sentinel, but it's actually on the 11th, Saturday.
Because I'm looking on the Wham website, and the Wham website says join us September 10th, 2005.
So is that Saturday?
It doesn't say whether it's Saturday or not.
Okay, I just looked at a poster today, and it said the 11th, and I had read it as the 10th.
Wow.
If you're on the website, you know,
it does say
call
the 10th.
Valerie.
Yeah, give her a call and ask her what the deal is, because it's, see, today is the...
I can hardly hear you also.
Okay, let me see what we can do here. And we got another group calling in, too. Why don't you check that one out and get back to us?
Well, I'm telling you right now, it's Saturday.
Okay, it is Saturday.
That's the San Lorenzo River Park.
That's the 10th. Today's the 8th, Thursday.
Okay. So it is on the 10th.
It is on the 10th.
Okay, maybe the poster's wrong.
Okay, I've got a caller calling in. I've been waiting for. Is there something you want to briefly say? Because I got to take this call.
I run an organization exactly like Wham. I've donated to Wham.
Oh wow!
And I got busted, and I just am going through arraignment right now. And I've been listening to you guys, considering calling you, setting up a program, and then you guys weren't aware of the date. So I went on and called you.
Huh.
Here I am.
Excellent.
You want to call me back?
I do want to call you back. Let me give you a number to call me off air. Although, see, my problem is I have a long-distance call coming in from Los Angeles, which now has just stopped because I wasn't answering it, and because I did want to talk to you, get you to finish here, because what you say sounds important. They're calling again. Let me give you the Huffline number, 423-4833. Call me on that number. Leave me a message, and I'll get back to you
All
after
right,
the show. Thank you very much. I hope you're on free radio. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello? 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 Uh-oh. Well, they're on the air, but we can't hear each other. I can hear them, but they can't hear me. Boy. Not the best time for technical realities here at Free Radio, at least for me. Obviously, either I'm doing something wrong with the... I'll try one more time, see how we're doing here. Hi, I'm taking you on the line. Are you there? Well, the problem I'm having here is that I hear you calling me in, and I can hear you now, but you're not going out on the air yet. When I put you on the air... Right. Well, hang on, Jeff. Apparently, you can't hear me, so I can hear you. you may have to do the show yourself from where you are. Because why don't you call in on the other line? Because let me give you that line 831-427-3772, and that way we can actually get you. Alrighty. And my apologies to listeners for the one-way call. That's the only way apparently they can hear me when I'm, at least that I know of right now. We are, however, going to hear them. They're going to hear me. It's just you will not be able to call in and ask them questions, which is a real pity. And you can always go to the chat room at pagesincolor.com, and you can address some concerns there, say what you want. My apologies for this. I'm not sure what the reason is, but I think we're going to at least get some discussion here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, this is Jeff. I'm on with my buddies over here, Mona and Ned.
Hey, Mona, Ned, Jeff, welcome.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
So you're down there in San Diego?
Los Angeles.
We're in Los Angeles.
You're all in Los Angeles.
That's
well,
right.
All right. Well, that's a little different. Okay. I guess
you're
I'll...
up in Santa Cruz, I understand.
What's that?
You're up in the good city of Santa Cruz.
This is true. And you're broadcasting through Santa Cruz illegally on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, hello, Santa Cruz.
Now he tells us.
At 101.1 FM, actually, and also freakradio.org. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for your patience in getting through this nightmare here.
We're on the public line, so people will not be able to call in, as I understand.
That's correct? A problem, yeah. People will not be able to call in because we can't use the other line, apparently, there's a problem with it.
But this goes out on the Internet also, the show?
It does.
We're on the air right now. Robert, what questions do you want to ask of us, any of us?
Well,
you want us to introduce ourselves?
Why don't you? Actually, I've kind of given a very brief introduction, but why don't you introduce yourselves individually, and we'll take it from there.
All right. I'll start out. My name is Jeff Lussman. I'm a private attorney here in Los Angeles, California. I'm a part-time attorney. I'm a private investigator who has one case. It was a case that was so bad I had to take it because of the abuse in the conservatorship court and the bench officer and all that. But basically, I do some investigation and pro bono work trying to help people who have been abused by the mental health system. I have a little one-line ad in the Yellow Pages Psychiatric Abuse Law Office, because sometimes I'll get calls from people who have been abused or their relatives are abused, and they're somewhat bewildered, and I wanted them to have a place to call. I'm also a Southern California co-spokesperson for mindfreedom.org, mindfreedom.org. It's an organization, used to be called Support Coalition, and it helps fight, and it also helps out, so to speak, the psychiatric establishment that is abusive. And I'm not criticizing all psychiatrists, but there is a clear element out there of psychiatry that certainly is abusive. And I'll let Mona go next.
Hi, I'm Mona Montgomery, and I'm also a private attorney in Los Angeles. And as a Christian attorney, I'm very concerned about the incursion into our personal freedoms by the psychiatric community, which I consider basically the Antichrist. And have noticed, absolutely, they are destroying our freedoms, especially the freedoms of the elderly. Go ahead, Ned.
Yeah, I'm Ned Parker. I'm a volunteer spokesperson for the Los Angeles Citizens Commission on Human Rights. And I met Mona, when we both went down to help a lady who had been put in under psychiatric care and was trying to be taken away her property, her rights to her own freedom, by a practicing psychiatrist in a court in Los Angeles, and we found that what was going on was very false and not true to the picture. This lady, her name was Shirley, was bright, was lucid, was very clear of mind, and here in the court of law, a psychiatrist was standing up saying that she was demented and that she couldn't plan for her future and couldn't remember anything. And I just talked to her 5 minutes before that, and her mind was clear as day, and it was like, why is this lady lying in court against, you know? And this led to a train of investigation, and we started finding out that this kind of happens all the time.
Ned, the organization you're with is called?
Citizens Commission on Human Rights. It's a watchdog group that helps people fight back against psychiatric abuse.
And candidly is connected with Scientology, right?
And I have a phone number for them, too.
Oh, definitely. We'll do that, too.
Sure.
Why don't you give us the number initially?
Well, it's 1-800. Let me get that number real quick. 1-800-942-2247.
Uh-huh. Okay, this is the Citizens Commission for Human Rights.
Yeah.
1-800-942-2247.
4-7.
Okay. Yeah. And again, as I mentioned,
if they have any complaints or problems with their rights being infringed upon or abuses by psychiatrists.
Right. So now, have either of the three of you ever been incarcerated or held on, involuntarily on a 5150?
No.
No.
I haven't, no. But I know people and plenty of them that have.
Uh-huh. And in Los Angeles, I know there was a special situation because this new repressive state law, AB 1421, which went into force last year, although it wasn't funded elsewhere, did get some kind of minor funding in Los Angeles, right? Are you guys familiar with that?
Is that where they can drug in your home and force you?
Needles on wheels, yeah.
Drugs?
Involuntary outpatient commitment.
Yeah, I think I know what he's talking about. They now have broader powers.
Correct.
To force you to take medication. Is that what you're talking about, Robert?
It is, but it's supposed to be also linked to having a whole bunch of other resources, which, according to psychiatric advocates for the rights of psychiatric victims up here, has not really gone into force, because, first of all, it's a county-by-county deal, and second of all, it requires each county to provide all kinds of resources prior to its being activated. But Los Angeles, I was told, through using some kind of pilot program in the jails, which was not really being done appropriately but was being done, was one county where it was being tried. You may not know much about this. I thought you might, because you're down in L.A.
Well, I knew they were talking about doing it three years ago, so I'm sure they are doing it. But I think they're planning to make it statewide.
Uh-huh. Oh, it is state. It's statewide, but it's county by county,
I see. As
I understand it, opt-in stuff. You can probably get more information by, I think it's the California Network of Mental Health Clients does some advocacy work around that.
Ned came up with some recent statistics. Ned, why don't you share those two?
Yeah, we don't think much money's being spent on it down here in L.A. County, but I am familiar with it. I know that Grass Valley was where an incident happened that sparked the bill that, you know, got that funding passed.
Okay.
For that AB 14, is it 1451 or 1421?
1421.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the reaction to it was. To have us, the lady in the, Helen Thompson was in the state legislature
right.
at the time. She was a psychiatric nurse before she got in the legislature. So she got a bill passed that would provide increased funding for psych treatment, particularly of anybody that, you know, was suspected of becoming violent.
Right. And they used the old standard was danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled as the basis for being forcibly dragged off, doped up, and held against your will. Now the standard apparently is looser, involves past hospitalizations.
I've never heard that. I don't believe that's correct. If it is, it really has gotten by me. Right now,
it depends on which county you're in.
Well,
they haven't spent much on it, according to one of my friends.
Yeah, it's an opt-in feature for each county if they want to use it. As I understand it, I mean, again, it's something I'm very concerned about, but I don't hear much about either. So that's why I always ask about it when I talk to anti-psychiatric advocates.
I've never seen it in the 5150 Welfare and Institutions Code. As far as I can tell, that code is the same. And as far as opt-in, as a practical matter, I do think one attorney told me, in fact, he referred to it as a cloak. If you've been locked up before, it helps you be locked up again. But legally, technically, as far as I know, the standards are the same. Danger to self, others are gravely disabled, which is defined as unable to provide food, clothing, or shelter for oneself as a result of chronic alcoholism or mental illness. And I've never seen a change in that. If there is a law to that effect, CCHR probably would have notified me, in fact. So
I'm looking online.
The organization I belong to, Mind Freedom, and I have not heard a word about it.
Looking online under www.psychlaws.org, California Treatment Advocacy Coalition. And,
yeah, the sad thing about that is the basis for which that diagnosis occurs, and it's sometimes a personal opinion, sometimes the opinion of a family member. You know, it could be a son. We ran into this with an elderly man who called in. He had one son, a problem kid. He had four children. One kid was always a problem in his whole life, and every time he got a chance, he would do something to bite his father. Yeah? In this case, he succeeded in getting the police to come over and lock up his dad on a 5150 hold. He said his dad was violent and was you know, destructive. And this 90-pound weakling, you know, 70-year-old man got knocked down to the floor, put in handcuffs, and carried off because the son, you know, had it out for him. and a psychiatrist, you know, had to diagnose him. And anyway, he went through this nightmare, three-day hold. You know, and this can happen to any given individual. Because the way the law is written.
Right. Yeah. I'm following up on AB 1421, which is called Laura's Law, and it's modeled after Kendra's Law.
Uh-huh.
And it's I'm actually looking on mindfreedom.org to.
Happen to know the code like 5150 that it would end? Like,
the actual where it actually is in the legal code,
in the California code, right?
I have not looked that up. I've just looked up, you know, the references to the actual law, which went into effect January 2003, I believe.
Okay, and it's called Laura's Law.
It's called Laura's Law. It's AB 1421.
Okay.
And AB 1421 programs would attempt to bring resisting groups into services provided via the old AB 34. And you may remember AB 34 is the law that kind of provided resources for, I guess, some homeless people and was used as the basis for this tax on millionaires proposition that passed at the last November, which essentially gave a lot of money to the psychiatric system under the guise that it wouldn't be forced. You remember that? That was Proposition 63, I believe.
Yeah, Prop 63 is
right.
About to take big money.
Right, and they, you know, off of the millionaires.
Of the millionaires.
And they claim that it wasn't supposed to, you know, result in forced stuff, but now concerns on mind freedom are that it is being used for that purpose. That's also concerns from Berkeley activists such as Michael Deal, who's a homeless advocate in Berkeley, who's concerned that it's going to be used to do the funding that previously kept AB 1421 moribund. You know, and kind of dead, but not really, in other words, not really active. But I mean, I don't know if I just wanted to mention it. And since we don't have a lot of information, there sounds like there's a difference of opinion, and I respect that. I could be wrong about all this, of course. I don't think I am, but I might be.
Well, I think it is just as you said, based on county to county geographic region as to the extent to which it's being promoted, pushed, and funded, since it is up to the individual county in the law. To provide the funding.
That's what I'm wondering. Maybe this isn't a state law. Maybe these are county laws.
It's a state law, but the county, each county has to fund it or not fund it. And in this case, originally only three counties funded it right after it came out.
So if we consider ourselves legal experts in this field, this is a law we should be aware of.
Damn right. Yeah.
Right.
It's called Laura's Law.
Yeah.
And it's funded in L.A., I believe. See, you're one of the three counties. So if you, in a future conversation we have, let me know what you find out about it and give me the latest update down there. And also, you know, whether and when and how it applies to weakening the, what's it called, the Landers Petras Short Act. I always get that.
Right,
that is the 5151.
Right, the Welfare and Institutions Code 5150 and 5250 and 5350 for that matter.
Yeah.
But
the destructive practices there are, you know, whether it be through that bill, 1421, or through a person being, you know, picked up on a 5150 hold, the dangers that are faced by the elderly as well as anybody of any age are basically the same. You know, that a person could be against his will, put on mind bending or harmful drugs or very addictive drugs that, you know, that he may have an allergic reaction to. He may have biochemical problems as a result of that. And then the electroshock is the big thing that is a danger in the case of elderly. Elderly people get 50%, it seems like, of electroshock treatment. There's still 100,000 people being electroshocked in the U.S. today, each year.
How about in California? Any estimates here as to what we got in terms of numbers?
Pardon?
How many in California? Do you have any idea?
I don't have the California breakdown on that.
And how about in Los Angeles?
And I wish I did. It's actually kind of hard to get those.
Get to work, you guys.
Regional data.
Yeah.
There is a law in California that says, at least on paper, that it's illegal to electroshock anyone against their will in the state of California. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I've seen it in writing. I've seen it in the patient's rights booklet. But I've also heard of a court, I guess he was a judge, not a commissioner, who ordered it anyway down in the Department 95 on San Fernando Road. The guy is retired now. I don't know if the story is true, but this is what I've heard. In fact, I heard it from somebody who used to be a court reporter down there.
Well, of course, Jeff, because once you have a conservator, all of your choices are put into the hands of your conservator.
But, you know, it didn't say it in the booklet.
It doesn't matter. We know, as a matter of law, that your rights, when you have a conservator, you lose all of your rights. Those rights now reside in the hands of the conservator.
I've never been clear on that because the booklet isn't clear. It says against your wishes, but then it doesn't say unless you have a conservator. I mean, you may be right, and it does happen.
That's what's
but
scary about this Department 95, that you now have a guardian in your that's acting in your place. And they are going to now make your decisions because it's been decided by a court that you cannot make your own decisions.
How can people get information about what their rights theoretically are, and then perhaps even more important, what rights they really have, and how to exercise them if and when they suddenly find themselves in the hands of psychiatric jailers?
Well, again, I would recommend that they call the Citizens Commission on Human Rights to get real straight information on it, and also, you know, to find out where they can get even more information.
Is there a website on that?
There is. It's cchr.org.
Cchr.org. Now, as I mentioned before, this is a group that everyone should know, full disclosure, is closely connected with Scientology, right?
It was co-founded by a psychiatrist, Dr. Thomas Oz, and the Church of Scientology.
Uh-huh.
And the link has been the church has sort of sponsored it, and psychiatrists like Thomas Oz who have been of a mind to clean up the profession and put ethics in and get it straightened out and make it humanitarian have been promoted and helped, you know, in that way. And he's really done a great thing in that field. I mean, I've read, you've probably seen his book, The Myth of Mental Illness. He was a pioneer.
Is he still around? Is he still around? Ned, is he still around? Or
he is. I heard him talk about a year ago.
Really?
He's this bright, very older gentleman who is. He's quick-witted, sharp. He's so alive. It's just incredible.
Yeah,
and
Ned's
with the world. You know?
He's written The Myth of Mental Illness, The Manufacture of Madness, a whole series of books, particularly famous in the '60s for. An alternate view, along with R.D. Lang of psychiatry.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing mind, and you know, just today his message has been that psychiatry and its tools are methods of control, state control, and he points to how Russia used that during the era of, you know, Russian totalitarianism to control any political dissident.
Right. Here's one area, one place where the Christians are allied with the Scientologists, which is that we both dissent against the way the Russian Revolution came down and all of the atrocities that occurred there, including this what Christians see as the Antichrist. I don't know how the Scientologists call it totalitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this ruthless control of this massive number of people using the techniques of mind control. Involuntary commitments to hospitalizations, surgeries, drugs that are not only destructive, but in the case of Russia, actually punitive and harmful and painful.
Yeah, psychiatry is kind of notoriously was used in the Soviet Union. You're talking about the old Russia, or are you talking about the current
Soviet
Russia?
Union.
And also in other totalitarian societies. For example, Nazi Germany was the first to, of course, massively kill off psychiatric patients in 1939, right?
That's right. And it was a psychiatrist there who sponsored the eugenics program, who lectured about it. Ernest Rudin was his name. And he was the one who promoted it to the Nazis as the social solution.
It should be said.
Hitler adopted.
It should also be said, however, that the German, not just the Nazis, but scientists throughout the world were getting a lot of this stuff from U.S. scientists who had very strong belief in eugenics, and they kind of way they predated this, you know, this the use of this in Nazi Germany. They were, you know, it was being used in American psychiatric wards.
Of course, it was.
They weren't. You know, they were giving mass sterilizations of blacks in the South. Well, not mass, but significant. No, there are significant abuses that were done there. It was being done as a matter of course in some courts for being feeble-minded. But I think, you know, the point, your point is well taken, Mona, that under totalitarian regimes, you know, it was used as a form of not just social control, but social elimination, social cleansing of the most...
As a way of making people submit to the communist belief system.
Right, or just getting rid of excess mouths in Nazi Germany.
And today, with a huge and growing elder population, you know, my own observation and finding out information about what's going on with them is that some, even as early as 1970s, 50% of the elderly in care homes were under psychiatric drugs. And I've heard quotes as high as 85% today, on the average, are daily drugged into a kind of unconscious or semi-conscious state. And I look at that and say that, you know, you could call it social engineering. You could call it preying on the elderly.
You can call it big profits for the pharmaceutical companies. You know, you can call it
definitely. Ned brought up the point that five times more ECTs. Electroshocks are given to people over 65 than people that are 64 because Medicare pays for them.
Yeah, medical insurance, government insurance starts to pay at that point.
Now, is it fair to say that the country where this is most frequently used is the United States? Or are there other countries?
The most psychiatric treatment is the U.S.
In China, they don't use a lot of psychiatric stuff. Does anybody have any information about China or India?
You know, the only information I have on China was from a lady who toured public schools recently in China and saw all these bright, shining kids who were playing, you know, and doing sports and on the, you know, jumping rope and things like that. And she asked one of the teachers, she said, "Do your kids take Ritalin?" And it was like, "What is Ritalin?" And they got into a discussion, and there were no psychiatric drugs, no drugging of kids, no labeling of kids.
Hey, a whole new market. Come on, let's go.
You know, if I might say, you know, there's a saying I have, follow the money, which is not, I didn't make it up. I think it's a Watergate, actually. But when you follow the money in this country, you have a lot of public assistance. That is, you got Medi-Cal and Medicare. And some years ago, I found out this kid was being held prisoner because I don't know, he acted up at school or something. And the money was coming through Medi-Cal. What these places do is to get their money, they either go through the private insurance or they go through the state of California where we have Medi-Cal. And it was about $1,500 a day, I think. And I've also heard the figure of $1,000 to $1,500 a day to hold somebody. So as a result, there's a conflict of interest built in. If I release this person, we lose, say, $1,250 a day, I think this person needs more treatment. And when you have an incentive like that, of course, you have a lot of abuse. And it's not like the state legislature has ever been made aware. I told my own assembly person, Jackie Goldberg, I wrote to her, and later I talked to her in person and said, "You never responded," and I gave her the same letter, and she still didn't respond. But I'm just saying, these people in the legislature, they must know this stuff goes on, or at least a lot of them do, because they've been told this. And it's a clear conflict of interest. And before I forget, earlier there was a question as to how people find out about their rights. I just wanted to throw in, there is something nationally, I believe, called protection and advocacy. You also have patients' rights offices in various counties. Now, I have a certain amount of contempt for patients' rights. I even reported someone who died on a psych hold a few years ago, and patients' rights would not even investigated a death. It was a 95-year-old woman who lasted 3 days, and that was it. This goes on all the time with protection and advocacy, and patients' rights certainly must know what's going on. And when you have the protectors not doing anything, just looking the other way, this is a problem, because the patients' rights must know a heck of a lot more than I do, and they don't do anything.
Now,
also, if people want to find out about their rights, in California at least, under the Welfare and Institutions Code, I believe it starts with Section 5000, that may be the LPS Act, and I don't know what it is in various states. I understand people may be listening to us on the Internet in various states or around the world or whatever, and they have to check their state or local laws. But in this state, it's a Welfare and Institutions Act, and you do code, and you do have certain rights that are enumerated, but you have to remember, psychiatrists will lie in records. They'll do what they have to do to keep somebody locked up, and you can't necessarily expect straight action from people in positions of power. I have never found a single representative who has been, at least in my area, straightforward and honest saying, "We've got to stop this." I have talked to members of the Board of Supervisors. I've written, I handed our State Attorney General, Bill Lockyer, a flyer about what was going on in the conservatorship court. I've written to the governor, the ACLU. I mean, it is ridiculous. And power tends to protect power, and I have never found anyone in a position of power who says, you know, we're going to stop this. All they do is pass it on, and although when the district attorneys or attorney general or whatever goes on TV saying they're prosecuting someone, and they seem indignant, and they seem like very good people against abuse, they make an exception, certainly, for abuse in the conservatorship system and psychiatric abuse, because I cannot get a single person in positions of power, a position of power, to take me seriously. And that's my lecture.
You know, I mean, the ACLU, I think, until 1975, didn't regard forced incarceration as being any kind of abuse. I think it took decades to get the ACLU to even consider it, and even now, I don't see them, I don't recall they're actually being at the forefront or involved in any cases. They may have been. Mona, do you know anything about this and the ACLU's position?
I don't think the ACLU is concerned about the elderly. I think they're promoting other agendas.
But what about psychiatric abuse under any rubric? Have you heard of any lawsuits that the ACLU has been involved in?
No, I haven't. And I personally would not look to the ACLU to protect my rights.
What about, you know,
I haven't either, Robert. As a matter of fact, Jeff Lessman, you're talking to, is the only attorney listed in LA's Yellow Pages under human rights.
Well, yeah, civil rights.
Civil rights.
Discrimination and civil rights. There are like two of us, and I'm the only one who has anything about psychiatry. And the city of LA has a lot of attorneys.
Well, what does the ACLU of LA say when you come wandering into their office talking about psychiatric abuses?
I will give you what happened. I kind of, at LA County, they have seminars. I think it was in 1998. There was something called, I believe, the Status of Civil Liberties in California. So Ramona Ripston, who was the Southern California director of the ACLU, was there, and I stood up and I said to her that the ACLU does not seem to care about this stuff. I understand they're busy keeping Christmas trees out of City Hall, but they should at least take a stand on the abuses that go on in psychiatry. And she told me she didn't know what I was talking about, and I said my point exactly, which was, I guess, a little nasty of me. But basically, and I've written to them, too, the ACLU, literally they are concerned about where the Christmas tree, there's a little cross in Los Angeles County seal, which they're helping to get off. Now, I happen to believe in separation of church and state myself, but their priorities are strange because they are much more interested in religious symbols on public property, and they have a right to be concerned about that, much more concerned than people being locked up and electroshocked. Now, which is the more important issue? I'd rather live with a tiny cross on the county seal than have my head exploded.
Mona, let me ask you this. What about on the conservative side, the Pacific Legal Foundation? Have they ever had any interest in dealing with psychiatric abuses?
I've never heard of them. Who are they?
They're a right-wing group that is concerned with, defending conservatives, whether on campus or at other places.
No, I just don't know that group.
Right. You know of them, Jeff?
No.
What's the name again?
Pacific Legal Foundation.
I've heard of them. They've defended the Boy Scouts of America.
Right, right. So that gays don't have to come in, things of that sort.
Yeah.
But what about people victimized by institutional psychiatry?
I haven't seen anything in their literature on it, but, I think it's a valid... here's the thing. I think it needs to be made an issue. You know, some of the good-meaning groups would make it an issue if we promote it more. And that's the point. Elderly don't get much attention because they're elderly. They don't speak out. And because they don't, I've asked the question of Mona, I've asked it of Jeff, why don't they get more attention and better treatment, you know? Because I have to back up Jeff. They have been treated like dogs in Department 95, worse than dogs, you know? And his public defender down there, this is the guy that's supposed to be protecting the rights of the elderly, was a wolf in sheep's clothing. He totally denied. I mean, he would not give the patient a right to a jury trial. Jeff's client was like begging for a jury trial, which he has a right to by law. Her public defender says no. We're not going to have a jury trial for it.
What happened? The public defenders, there are some public defenders, were waiving jury trial without consent of the proposed conservatee. So as a result, a lot of people were put on conservatorships with no trial because, like in my client's case, we ended up suing the county, and the judges protected the county.
Now,
so
a conservatorship, Jeff, is where you lose your legal rights, right to make financial decisions.
You can lose where you want to live. You can be forcibly drugged. You may lose your right to have a bank account, that sort of thing. And there's like an institutional elder abuse. We talk about elder abuse in society, but a lot of people, I would say most people, are not aware of how much elder abuse is by bench officers. You can, like my client, she was on a conservatorship for a year, could not live where she wanted to. She was drugged. It was not good for her. She tells me that she lost some of her memory. It's institutional abuse. And you have to be careful also while I'm on the subject of abuse. Adult Protective Services, I haven't heard stuff from them lately, but I used to certainly. You have to watch out for them. And also Child Protective Services, you got to be a little leery. I know these services were set up to mean well, but there's a guy who works in patients' rights who had a saying, when someone comes running after you,
we're talking,
to help you run even faster.
We're talking with Mona Montgomery, Ned Parker, and Jeff Lustman of various groups in Los Angeles, and just as individual advocates fighting forced, let me get this, correct me if I'm wrong, you three, forced drugging, forced institutionalization, forced shock, things of that sort. Are there any countries where progress has been made, in your view? On this station, we've talked with Jim Gottstein up in Alaska. We've talked with Robert Whitaker back in Boston. We've talked with Grace Jackson, all of whom have been active in exposing psychiatric institutional misconduct. And I guess I'm looking for sort of a vision of the future that we can move toward. It's always, it's heroic to be fighting these quixotic fights against huge institutional opponents, and I do it all the time. But are there places where there actually has been some progress, in your view?
Well, in California, some years ago, the laws were even worse. Now that you do have rights, well, which are generally, at least often, certainly adhered to. I would say generally adhered to. The problem is there's a manipulation of the system. But right now, for instance, if they want to put you on a 14-day hold after a 3-day hold, you do have a right to hearing. If you lose that hearing, you can go to the court on San Fernando Road, the mental health court. It used to be, I think back in the 60s, you could be locked up for a few months on the word of a psychiatrist. And
yeah.
That's like punishment.
There was a change in 1960, I guess 67 or 69, with the Landris Petrum.
LPS, it did improve things.
The LPS Club. But, I mean, I'm talking, I mean, I'm not looking back there. I mean, they also improved when they stopped beheading people for
exactly.
theft. But, you know,
Robert,
so what?
I think it's very valid to point to a better picture and what's happening to improve the scene, if and where. And there has been progress, particularly comes to mind Italy. There have been major reforms that have been brought about. One on the work done by an Italian doctor, Antonucci, we'll call it. But his work has demonstrated that inside the hospitals, these were insane asylums where people were chained down, living in their own filth, and never given baths and things like that. He would actually bring these patients out, get them to walk around, clean them up, make them have good dinners, and then actually started having dance lessons for them, getting them to have music lessons, demonstrating that there was life again. And these patients, one by one, you heard them, I've seen videos on it. You know, this guy taught me how to live again. Well, resulting from this kind of work, the government has started to see, hey, we don't need these people in chains locked up. We need somebody that's interested in their survival and better conditions.
What about
they have actually passed laws closing down those asylums.
What about drug use? Drug use in
it. Drug them.
What about drug use in Italy? Is it up? Is it down? As far as I'm talking about forced drugging or even voluntary, you know, the immense amount of pro psychiatric drug propaganda you get in this country, and the kind of, you know, the increase from what is it? $500 million to $20 billion in drug sales between 1996 and 2004, according to Robert Whitaker.
And by the way, he has written the most damning book that I've ever read, Mad in America.
Oh, yeah.
It's so well documented. It's just so true.
For those who want, he has a recent interview updating that book on the Street Spirit website, which is the publication I write for. He has a long interview, which I reviewed about a week ago. Again, it's www.thestreetspirit.org. You can catch the whole interview by Robert Whitaker talking about what I think has been interestingly debated on the Mind Freedom website, the question of whether this claim by psychiatrists that psychiatric drugs deals with a chemical imbalance in the brain, this claim, which seems to me to be now pretty clearly unsubstantiated. They go after, you know, the psychiatric medications are supposed to deal with, you know, dopamine, dopamine receptors, and with serotonin inhibitors, depending on whether you're considered to be schizophrenic or depressed. Are you folks familiar with this?
Yeah, of course.
As a matter of fact, you know, the psychiatric officialdom took a big blow in the U.S. just 6 months ago when the FDA finally labeled, you know, after so many years of bad case reactions and kids, you know, dying with the drugs, they finally labeled some of the major psychiatric drugs as potential, you know, causes of suicide, depression, manic behavior, et cetera, and this is now, you know, official, and it's a big step forward.
Although not as big.
Prior to that, in the UK, United Kingdom did that earlier.
Right, and did that more thoroughly, I believe. I think they've even been banned to some extent in the UK.
Right, and speaking of, this is another answer to your previous question, have there been reforms? UK is a big area for that. What they have is a socialized medical program. So when a person gets psychiatric treatment, they get it through the medical doctor, the family, like the family care, primary care physician. And what they've ordered, more or less, that gets done in every situation in the UK, is that psychiatric drugs are not the first choice. The doctor
really?
Has to tell the patient to go on a regimen of exercise and diet, say for 2 months, and then come back and talk to me. and let's see how you're doing.
Wow. Where did you catch this from? Have you just by talking to people over there? Or?
I just talking to my niece who graduated from Oxford in May, and she was just describing this brand-new program that's now in practice.
That's a mandate. That's a mandate for doctors throughout England, throughout the United Kingdom?
Yeah. It's their official, you know, program.
That's quite a change.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's magnificent. It's what's needed and has been. You know, we've been saying it here. We've been a few lone voices,
amazing,
you know, calling out. Listen, we've had results. We've found somebody like Dr. Whitaker who says we found, you know, that a person who's healthy, a person who's on a good exercise, who eats well, who has good vitamins and nutrition, feels better. Who gets enough sleep, he feels better. Why don't we do that first? A person who's in a psych hospital has about a 40% chance of having an undiagnosed underlying physical illness or maybe a broken bone that never got healed.
And then there are just realities that people face crises in their lives that drive them crazy for a while. You know, what are you going to do? And sometimes recovery just takes a while. You just got to, you know, as Whitaker points out in the 1830s and 40s, the Quaker method of, you know, gentle caring was certainly beat out the water torture and other different approaches that were touted as medical treatments, right?
They got treatments of schizophrenics 200 years ago, these Quakers did, that far exceed anything that modern practices, psychiatric practices, don't even pretend to cure. They just say it's incurable and leave it at that. After $7 billion of research at the National Institutes of Mental Health, that is what the conclusion of their director was, that psychiatric diseases, we have to conclude, are at this point in time, are incurable.
Mona,
that's a fine result, isn't it?
We're talking to Mona Montgomery, Ned Parker, and Jeff Lustman. Mona, you're currently taking a case of someone who what is being held forcibly against her his will, or are you trying to get some recompense? What's the story with that case?
I think you're thinking of Jeff's client.
Oh, I am. Okay.
And I've worked with Jeff on this client. It's a very interesting woman. She's a very vivacious, interesting, intellectually alert woman who's been fighting these causes all her life, and naturally in the normal course of events, when you get old, you get nabbed. And she was nabbed, and she came to CCHR, and they located Jeff. Her story was pretty typical. She went to a hospital. They wanted to keep her there. She didn't want to stay there. Jeff, why don't you tell the story?
Yeah, what happened? She was recovering from hip surgery. And while recovering from hip surgery, this doctor walks in, says, I'm putting you in a psychiatric hold. The doctor, I believe, had been told that Shirley was trying to wheel herself out, which Shirley denies, and the doctor really made up a diagnosis of dementia. She said it in the conservatorship court. I think it's in the records. I got to check again. It's been so long since I've read them. But she made up a diagnosis of dementia. About a year later, a psychologist who Ned brought in found that my client did not have dementia, and she couldn't have gotten out of it because there's no cure for dementia. To make a long story short, we sued the public defender's office for waiving trial without consent, the public guardian's office, which worked to put her on a conservatorship without talking to her. I wrote letters, I would phone, just talk to this woman. They refused. The public guardian's office, they were elder abusers as far as I'm concerned. We also sued the facility she had been staying at. We also sued the doctor. We also sued the hospital. Well, the judge dismissed the whole case on the improper grounds of collateral estoppel. What he said essentially was, since the conservatorship court found out that she needs it, therefore we're going to use that decision in this court, in spite of the fact that I said in my papers that the judge, the commissioner, was in cahoots with the public defender's office. So you see, they had me kind of checkmated just by the fact that the commissioner who was in cahoots with the public defender's office says, oh, this woman needs help, that sort of thing. That's how they defended the public defender's office. So I appealed it in the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals for the district in Los Angeles falsely stated in their decision, while they were going to put back the hospital and the doctor, they were not going to put back the county because allegedly my client had a trial in conservatorship court, so collateral estoppel in that sense was proper. The problem is she didn't have a trial. The Court of Appeals just made it up. As far as I can tell, they just lied, and I did a petition for rehearing, which I brought to their attention. She did not have a trial, but they did it anyway. And I have since talked to other attorneys who told me that the Court of Appeals does make things up. That is, they are such a political arm. They make things up. One lawyer told me if the facts were as the Court of Appeals actually stated them in his case, he wouldn't have taken the case in the first place. So one of the things I have found, unfortunately, is you can't trust bench officers as much as you think. I used to think that people on the bench were the
cream of
the
crop. Wait a minute. You're suggesting we can't trust our court system?
I'm sorry to say it, but that's true. This is an exclusive
for
on your show.
For heaven's sake.
I'm sorry. So they're not. I thought they were honest. Honestly, I was so naive. My client knew better. She told me later that she was concerned for me because I was trusting judges. And it turned out she was.
His client worked as a legal secretary for 40 years, by the way. She knew what they were doing to her.
So that's what happened. Some of these judges, so the Court of Appeals judges were lying. And I wrote to the Commission on Judicial Performance. They wouldn't do anything. I wrote to the presiding judge. He wouldn't do anything. And his successor, he wouldn't do anything. And the next person, he wouldn't do anything. These judges cover each other. They cover for the county. And I was naive. I had no idea. And I'm not kidding either. I had no idea this
went on. So what happened to your lawsuit?
It's still there. It's scheduled for a February trial. We're supposed to go to mediation. I think it's November 1st and November 2nd. And it's ongoing. My client's deposition was some weeks ago, and her two sons, in fact, were deposed a few weeks ago. And that's what's going on. So
you're suing for damages for false imprisonment and what?
Largely false imprisonment. Uh-huh. So she was held two different times through the psychiatrist, and the hospital would not listen to me. And I guess they're listening to me now. All they had to do was get a neutral psychiatrist to talk to her and just put her in some nice, you know, whether it be nursing home or whatever. And I guess they thought I was bluffing or something.
Are you just looking for damages for her? Or are you looking for changes in hospital policy that would impact the population generally?
Ironically, the hospital, I won't say the name of the hospital, but there are two of them in Los Angeles County. And the one, I call it the evil one, was closed down about a year ago.
Why don't you want to say the name of the hospital?
Well, I can say it if you want. Well, it's public record. Northridge Hospital is what it is.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know if I could say it. Northridge Hospital. They closed down about a year ago, and I did want to affect changes in them. In fact, one of the reasons for a lawsuit against the county, I wanted to affect change in the county. I was more after the county, frankly, than after the doctor of the hospital. My client is more after the doctor, and I can see her point. But the bigger thing to me was changes in the county, but because of dishonest judges.
What kind of changes are you looking for in the county?
I would like, before the public guardian's office works to keep someone locked up or to keep them, or put them on a conservatorship, I think they need to talk to the person or get a neutral psychiatrist who doesn't make money on the case. Talk to the person.
Jeff, is this done in
second opinion?
Yeah, second opinion.
Well,
Jeff, is this
only, you know?
Is this done in any other state or county that you know of?
I don't know. I know L.A. County is a hotbed of psych abuse.
Public
guardian's office.
But is there
apparently has been part of it?
Is there a neutral procedure in any other jurisdiction that you know of?
I don't know. It seems to me. In fact, I got an email from when I called into your show 2 weeks ago. A gentleman was nice enough to write to me and tell me about some procedure. In fact, I think here's his name is William. Maybe he's listening right now. He did write to me with some information on it, and I appreciate that. He does say something to the fact that there is, but that's in another state, that there is a way to go about it. But in L.A. County, you're kind of stuck.
You know,
that was what got me, was that there is just this one hearing, and there's one judge, and that psychiatrist's opinion is held up above all other data evaluated on that person, including the judge's observation himself of the person in front of it.
So we've got three fighters against psychiatric abuse from L.A. County on the line here. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Unfortunately, they're on the call-in line because I can't get the damn guest line to work. So if you want to ask them a question, you have to jump on pagesincolor.com. Pagesincolor.com. If you have a computer, because we're kind of reaching the end of this segment, though, I can extend it a little bit to see if anybody actually will actually use pagesincolor.com. What a concept. Again, it's very easy. Just jump on the chat room. If you got a question for Mona Montgomery, for Ned Parker, or for Jeff Lessman, who are eagerly awaiting any questions.
Now, I do have some practical advice for anyone who finds themselves caught in the system.
Go ahead, Mona.
If you can escape, you will be free. This is not known, but the truth is, they will not pursue you if you escape.
I sat in conservatorship court, and I actually heard, like, the public defender say to the commissioner, and, you know, such and such a person, we don't know where they are, and I've heard the commissioner dismiss the case, as bizarre as that sounds.
Right, because because we're not talking about people who are criminals or a threat to public safety.
No, we're talking about people who get themselves locked up in hospitals.
Right, or who get locked up.
The secret is escape.
You know, that's actually happened in Santa Cruz. I've met people who've escaped from our local Dominican psych ward.
Yeah, and it's just wonderful. They do not track you down.
It's sort of like, you know, getting away from, you know, the southern states and if you're a black.
Right.
Or getting away from Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia or, you know, Pinochet's Chile.
You know, it's a matter of survival. And in this case, you know, you do what's most survival. And that would be very survival. The electric shock, if you end up in their hands, unfortunately, if you get that, 250 out of 300 people died in the United States from electroshock in 1 year.
Oh, but be honest, that's of how many people are actually were electrically shocked that year?
Yeah, there's like 100,000 people.
Right, so it's a relatively small death rate, but it's still a significant death rate. Right?
Yeah, that's on the bed. That's like reported. That's not what happened a few months later. But of the ones that were reported, 250 of the 300 were elderly patients.
Which brings up a point. I think that Canadian activists have been trying to get into the law or maybe it's U.S. activists I'm thinking about. They're trying to make sure that all there's a requirement that all ECT treatments be at least put forward as specific stats. You know how many people are being treated, what the consequences are. There's apparently no reporting requirement in most in any jurisdiction that I know of right now. Do you know of any reporting requirements for electroshock?
I don't know of any.
Yeah, I haven't heard of any either.
No, but I think that would be very valid data and should be reported.
Jim,
I agree with you there.
Jim Gottstein.
And it could be easily reported because Medicare and the people who pay for those things have those statistics and should release those.
Maybe Public Records Act requests, or I guess you're probably going to need legislative, you know, pressure. But, you know, Jim Gottstein up in Alaska, who's concerned with, you know, fighting for the rights of folks who are incarcerated or otherwise, you know, in the psychiatric web, when I asked him, what's your advice? I mean, and Mona's suggestion is get the fuck out of there. Leave.
Right, but there's a step before that.
Okay.
It's very important if you get yourself incarcerated to be in totally polite. Don't raise any eyebrows. Don't make any waves. You've got to become a CIA undercover agent the minute you realize you're being targeted.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you will be able to escape.
Right. Otherwise, they'll watch you more closely.
Right. Exactly.
And Jim's proposal was to simply wait it out and get off 2 to 5 days because budget problems in most jurisdictions, not in California because of the Proposition 63. I'm not sure about that situation. Will, you know, make them essentially dump you after but not if you're, I guess, over 65 on Medi-Cal, you know.
Because they've got their hooks into the Medicare system.
That's right.
Right.
That's where the conservatorship problem that Jeff's been working so diligently on comes in as the real. The worst violation of rights that I've ever seen. And the patient simply, at that point, loses his right of self-determination.
Well, in Santa Cruz County, the question for people dealing with this is what should they do when they're, you know, being threatened with this kind of thing, whether it's the 3-day hold you're kind of stuck with often, but the 14-day...
Okay, I have a very important thing to say.
Okay.
Everyone needs to have a buddy, and they need to have a nomination of conservator for this buddy that they trust. So that the buddy can go in and say, I'm the one that's to be the conservator, not the public guardian,
uh-huh.
Not this other person. And so everyone should start thinking about who they trust to move in to as a checkmate or counterplay if someone else tries to move in on you.
It's a very good position, legal position.
Yeah, it sounds like a definitely a good idea.
There's another program that I've heard about, and that's getting yourself a living will. And it's basically the one that, you know, that in your will and everything else says that, you know, that you will not receive psychiatric treatment, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think you can do that, Ned. I've never heard of being allowed to. A living will is usually,
it's not a living will. I think it's actually, if you make an affidavit when you are competent,
yeah,
right,
that you wish not to be medicated with the following drugs, and you list them.
Oh, that's great. I never heard of that.
And you carry a little band around your wrist. This is actually one of the suggestions, I guess, that Grace Jackson had when she was on the show.
Okay.
And,
great.
But I mean, I'm also looking for, and these are all good ideas,
yeah,
and good suggestions to follow.
Yeah.
In terms of the actual legal structure in California, asserting your rights can actually be quite effective if you push through, if you can get through the psychiatric haze, and if you have anybody supporting you. Often you come wandering into court, you know, in old clothes, you know, and you've been
befuddled. You bring up a good point. If you find yourself being taken into court, and I'm talking about civil court, which is not as much of a nightmare, but it is true that if you look well and dress well and don't get scared, you can try to make friends with the probate investigator. And if you can make friends with anyone in that system, you're an awful lot better off.
Well, I mean, that may be true, too, but I'm just thinking when you demand, often when you demand a habeas corpus hearing, you know, you're rid of habeas corpus. If you push it through to the end, they don't want to go through with it, and they will. I don't know stats on this, but I know that it often happens. You get released, and so it's. I encourage people to assert their rights on this issue. I mean, that's sort of a different perspective than yours, Mona, which sounds like, you know, keep a low profile and then, you know,
right,
slip away when you're. But
if you have an attorney who's going to fight for you, that's fine. But if you don't, and most people, you can't even get an attorney because you're already locked up. They're not letting you make phone calls. The best thing you better do is realize that the power structure is against you and behave yourself.
There is something to remember. If you lose on a three-day hearing, which is held at the facility, and you say, I want to go to court, then a lot of times, I think this is what's being referred to here, a lot of times these places will just release you because the psychiatrist does not want to go to court. So as a result, they just spring you. I guess you're pronounced cured, and that's the end of it. Even if you lose at the hospital hearing, they don't necessarily have enough confidence to go to court, and they don't want to go to the trouble. So a lot of times, and it's important to remember this, make sure you tell patients' rights you want to go to court for a second bite of the apple, and a lot of times you will be released.
What about now, I mean, we don't really have time to cover this because we're kind of reaching the end of this, but, and how much time have you guys got?
I got all night.
Yeah.
Mona?
We go as long as you can go.
Okay, well, we'll go a little further then. Okay. And this is a question I always raise because You touched on it a bit, Ned, as to there are people, you know, it's easy for Zazites like ourselves, it sounds like we all may all be Zazites to some extent, or Langites or something, people concerned about your rights and, you know, poo-pooing mental illness, quote-unquote, is a big myth, or something which is, you know, you just give them a little health, you know, better diet and some healthy exercise. There's some, you know, that obviously doesn't cover the whole situation, clearly, because we have people for all kinds of reasons, particularly in the middle of an Iraqi war, which is sending back more, you know, people and in distress, and in the middle of a scene where government resources are not available for obvious things like housing, and medical care for people who need it. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about kickbacks to drug companies and absurd incarcerations and forced drugging of elders. I'm talking about, you know, real health care for emergency situations and even preventive care, you know, for poor people. It's just not available a lot of the time. What can people do, particularly people who are poor people, and that's people listening to the show, some of them, when you feel like you're cracking up, when you feel like you don't know what to do, when you feel, I mean, what you have friends who've probably been in this situation. Maybe you've been in it yourselves. What can you do?
Well, the first step is to communicate. The first step is find anybody that you feel some slight trust for or willingness to trust. And it's not always easy. The person who's cracking up is usually not trusting somebody.
There really is a huge underground system that's absolutely working, and that's all of these 12-step programs. That's where I go when I get in trouble, and I've never been failed.
You know, their hats off to them because they really stand up against a tough, a tough job. And it is true. They're volunteers. They're working, most of them.
No, they're not.
Help.
They're not volunteers. They're other people. The 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous,
yeah,
Emotions Anonymous, Neurotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics. There's just a massive network of these programs where people go to check in with other fellow sufferers, and there aren't any. There's nobody in charge.
Okay, that's what I mean. They're all volunteers, like you and I are. We're just helping each other help others. Bottom line is to help someone.
Right. Okay. Then we are agreeing, and it's massive, huge network of organizations.
I guess we have actually someone's joined the chat room and has this guy called or a woman called Springhead. I'm not sure if it's man or woman. Asking, how may I volunteer on this issue specifically in Northern California? Do you have any answer for that?
In Northern California?
Right. You guys are in Southern California.
It sounds like you know more people up there.
Yeah,
groups with.
I guess I would say to that listener, give a call to the Huff line, 831-423-4833, and I'll try to put you in touch. Give me the city you're in. And I might suggest some folks you might want to volunteer with. I'm kind of got my finger on all kinds of pies. I don't fighting psychiatric abuse is not my number one priority, but it's one of the things I'm concerned about, and I try to give airtime to.
Robert, I really appreciate you doing this. And she could call the Citizens Commission on Human Rights and find out who's being active in that particular zone in her area.
Her or his area.
And it's true that our focus is not providing the care. Right now, we're working on changing the legal structure, changing the public opinion, so that at some great golden day in the future, there will be true mental health rehabilitation, one that really works and what people can turn to that will give them, you know, a sense of who they really are and the joy of living again. That's what we're pushing.
Huh.
And if anybody wants to contact mindfreedom.org, they're based in Oregon. I don't know if they have anyone in the Northern California area, for instance. And largely it's more of a loose association. But for information, they can certainly contact the person who runs it is David Oakes. And if nothing else, they'll be able to find out if they can do anything in their area.
Hmm. Well, so that's some information. I hope that I'm not clear if the chat roomer, I guess we can call that person, is... because I'm having some problems with the chat room as well. Shows you my expertise here. But certainly, I think if the person is listening, they can do that. Again, the options are to go to mindfreedom.org. I guess your group, Ned, also has an online website, right?
Yeah, cchr.org.
One more time?
cchr.org.
cchr.org. And... Mona, do you have any? You suggest, I guess, various.
If you need help, I'm not saying if you're looking for a place to volunteer.
Right.
If you yourself need psychiatric help, I recommend going to these free self-help groups. One of the biggest one is the Alcoholics Anonymous program, and their subsidiaries, including Emotional Health Anonymous, Neurotics Anonymous, etc. Because here you can get a directory of meetings. You can go to as many meetings as you want to a day in a crisis. Once I went to 5. I think once I went to 7 in one day. And you get so much nurturing from other people who are looking for exactly what you're looking for. Everyone in the room is in that room because they are suffering.
And we're not talking about a chat room, but an actual physical room.
Physical room, right.
That's wonderful. Mona, have you heard of a group called Safe Harbor?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I do know, and this would be more on Robert's question, too. This is directed specifically to non-psychiatric alternatives for mental healing. They have a website. It's alternativementalhealth.com. And they have total list of resources there.
Alternativementalhealth.com. And this, again, is what is this group we're talking about?
What do they do, Ned?
First of all, they provide a website with trying to link every non-psychiatric safe alternative to how do you handle a very severe mental crisis, upset, emotional problem, situation without getting in the hands of a psychiatrist. And that could be whatever, you know, communication groups, diet groups. They have every known resource that they can put their fingers on.
That's great.
Yeah, and that's right on that website, alternativementalhealth.com. They're official organization name is Safe Harbor. I think they are working in the direction of eventually providing actual, like you might say, huge ranches or something where lots of people could actually go to find, you know, a safe place to be.
And I see
with
that...
no harassment.
It sounds great. I see that in the chat room, the chatter Springhead, who is a woman, not a man, by the way, and thanks us for making that option clear, is a Santa Cruz native. And Santa Cruz has a local group, PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. Jane Kaiser is the woman who has been working with this group for decades. She's still out there, you know, fighting local psychiatric abuse. And she's not a lawyer. She doesn't have a large organization. I don't know if she attends 12 Steps, but she's got, you know, she's a powerhouse, and she's over 60, so she kicks ass. And if you can get, you can give her a call at 475-7904, area code 831-475-7904. I'm going to put that on the chat room here for anybody who's
And I do
in.
Think that's what the Springhead is looking for. She wants to get into the, she wants to actually be a warrior for the cause. So she wants to hook up with one of these super warriors. If it's a different, she's at a different level. She's not suffering herself.
Right. I think she wants, or just, you know, to be part of a citizens group.
Yeah. So she needs to hook up with one of these.
And she has, I believe,
know.
She has another question for you. Actually, specifically for you, Mona, what about 12 steps for, quote, schizophrenics? He says it seems that a 12-step program isn't really helpful for someone experiencing
hallucinations. Oh, I totally disagree.
Uh-huh.
I'm very much in favor of the Quaker model, which is get in a room and talk to your friends. In fact, that's why they call themselves the Friends.
Wow.
And their religion is based on just getting together and talking. I think it's incredibly healing, and there's no disease, in my opinion, that will not respond favorably to this kind of approach.
Her comment is more severe mental problems seem to need something more than AA, but different than medication.
They have Schizophrenics Anonymous.
And how does that, have you been to such meetings?
I've been to all of them.
Uh-huh.
And they work, if you're schizophrenic, you might, you know, you'll be okay in that meeting, but if you're not schizophrenic, it would be very boring for you. But the point is, you want to connect up with people who are on your level so that you can experience the love and the sharing and know that you're not alone, which starts the healing process.
Hmm. Well, that's a suggestion.
It's a suggestion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you will stay out of the hands of psychiatrists, or you might even find that you do need a psychiatrist because your fellow sufferers will say, hey, you really need your medication right now. And you'll get a balanced information instead of falling into the hands of somebody who's going to exploit you.
I have heard an interesting theory that the more severe the crisis or the worse the problem, the milder the cure is the one that works best.
That's a nice way of approaching it. We've been listening to a conversation with three activists from Los Angeles fighting against various psychiatric abuses, and they are many. We've been talking with Ned Parker, Mona Montgomery, and Jeff Lustman down there. And I'm going to give each of you an opportunity to kind of give contact numbers and information, and then we'll leave it at that.
That'd be great.
All right. Should I start? If anybody wants to email me, I'm at Jeff Lustman, JeffLustman, @yahoo.com. If anybody wants to call me, I'll give my number out. It's 323-462-3810 with 323 area code. 462-3810. I guess, Mona, you can go next if you want.
Yeah, I don't give out my contact information because I'm overloaded with my legal practice here, but if anyone really wants to talk to me, go through CCHR, which is Ned's group, or go through Jeff, and we'll talk it over. I'll talk it over with Ned or Jeff or CCHR.
Okay.
And I'll give you that number, Ned Parker, and I'm calling from the Citizens Commission on Human Rights of Los Angeles, CCHR, and that's a toll-free 800-942-2247. Call anytime.
Hey, I want to thank you three for taking an hour and 15 minutes and dealing with phone problems here. And I guess none of you are at a computer where you can actually hear the show, right?
Well, I will be in a second. You want to give the website?
Yeah, the website is www.freakradio.org. That's
right.
What anybody can go to if they want to hear this show.
Great.
And you can also, if you want to hear yourselves, callers, or if anybody's listening, hasn't caught the whole show, wants to catch it, it's archived at www.HuffSantaCruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, HuffSantaCruz.org. And you just click on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which is the name of the show.
Thanks, Robert, for this and for the opportunity to be on your show.
Hey, thanks for doing the work you guys are doing and you gals are doing. Gal
okay.
and guys.
Okay.
Thanks, all right. Robert.
Hey, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Good Bye-bye. Night.
Good night. And that was the call it was. Wow. It wasn't actually a conference call. It was a, sort of one of those link-up calls. I think Jeff called Ned, who called Mona, and they all called me or some such thing. And it actually worked. My apologies to callers for not having a way of calling in, but you can call in now if you have comments on what you've heard, if you have questions, if you have updates. Please give a call, 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772. Phone line is open. And while I'm waiting for the phone to ring, I'm going to play a little music, but don't let that stop you from calling in.
I get stronger every day. I come up in an acorn, but I didn't have much to say. Here I am is where I'll be, and here is where I'll stay, till the cold wind comes and blows my leaves away. You are a willow, and you bend with every breeze, wading through the meadow with the water around your knees. You would bend where I would break, I'd give that much away. When the cold wind comes, it blows your leaves away. Then there's old Jack Pine, lonesome all the time, halfway up the hillside just to watch the river wind. Some folks think he's singing, but tells them that's where he's crying. And when the cold wind comes, old Jack don't pay no mind. North wind don't believe me, but I'm bound to make it through. One more time to watch the sunrise like we used to do. You'll be there to shade, I will lift my arms to pray, till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Then there's old Jack Pine, lonesome all the time, halfway up the hillside just to watch the river wind. Some folks think he's singing, but tells them that's where he's crying. And when the cold wind comes, old Jack don't pay no mind. Stronger every day.
And that was Ann Feeney. Not quite finished with her song, but we do have a caller. Hi there, caller.
Yes, sir.
And what's your name?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, you are you?
Yes, sir. And I was amazed that you had so many people from here who were talking about Mental Melodies.
And are you one of those crazy folks down there?
Well, I'm telling you, I've been here since 1973.
Huh.
And I have never seen anybody here who is mentally disturbed.
What about the mayor?
Mayor Villaraigosa. Mayor Villaraigosa. Well, mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, there is a certain threshold. So, but of course, I'm jesting.
Of course.
I think that, in fact, if somebody is sane out here, that person would not fit into the greater scheme of things. Just this morning, I passed by a four-car accident.
Right.
One car had plowed into a traffic light, another one in a tree, and the other one was upturned. And you know, this is just basically a usual sight out here. Doesn't even raise an eyebrow. So anyway, it's just much better to be insane out here, and you get along just fine.
What'd you think of our guests?
I just got the tail end of it. I was otherwise busy, but you know, I mean, there are volumes to be said about this. I'm myself from a Middle Eastern culture,
huh.
And I'll tell you this is kind of and once you ask, you know, what do they do in those cultures?
Yes,
and this is kind of serious. They really cripple their children,
huh.
in families. They dote on them, and at the same time they brutalize them.
Wow.
But then they create a culture that would perpetuate this kind of behavior to our children. You know, so they would raise their children the same way, and then people are either children or adults, and once they become adults, they become despotic parents,
uh-huh.
And it just goes from generation to generation.
Which country are you from?
I'm from Iran.
Uh-huh.
Same story is next door in Iraq.
I mean, do they have psychiatric wards and psychiatric drugs? What do they do when somebody seems crazy?
You know, it's once they use the word for a person who is mentally ill. There are a couple. One of them is Majnoon, which is like djinn-like, a person who is bedeviled.
Uh-huh.
The other one is Divana, which is like a person who is also possessed. So there were forms of possession.
Is it regarded as a religious phenomenon or as a psychiatric or medical phenomenon?
Not necessarily. They were just crazy. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, they just lived in the population. Later on, they started to have, quote-unquote, asylum, and they would just put very obvious cases there. But then, as Western culture started to penetrate, and when I'm saying that, you know, they dote on their children, and then they also abuse them, and then society is rigged, so this perpetuates itself. I don't mean that these people are not hurt by the situation. Of course they are. It makes family the only viable institution in a society. This is something that America doesn't understand in Iraq. They don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the moment when another force goes in there and begins to work, the whole society just falls apart, which we are saying that it disintegrates, it implodes.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, but they hurt. So once West began to penetrate Iran, they started to glom on things like Valium, like Ativan, and they actually considered it modern and Western and chic to take these things. The Shah of Iran, in a Barbara Walters interview, said that he took sleeping pills. He took Valium.
Uh-huh.
I mean, imagine if George Bush said this in an interview, you know.
What about things like Stelazine and Thorazine and things like that? Were these drugs regularly used in wards for psychiatric?
I don't know about those.
And what about under the Ayatollah Khomeini and under more recent?
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Opium for the longest time was the drug of choice in that region of the world.
Prescribed as medication?
It was medication. There were also people who were just opium addicts, teriyaki, you know, old men who would just smoke it and just sit all day in the shade and drink black tea, dark tea. And, you know,
when was the last time you were in Iran?
I haven't been there for many years.
Huh.
I do monitor it very closely, though.
Right.
I mean, down to the point that a couple of years ago, I found a UC Berkeley...
right, well, what happens to a person who has a quote breakdown in Iran? I mean, let's say what happens to a person who's poor, and then what happens to a person who's well-to-do? Do you have any sense of that in 2005?
If Tehran now has 60 million people, 60 million people
right.
in that city. And if you go, and you can just go on the net even and put Tehran and look at the images. North Tehran doesn't look anything different from West Los Angeles or anywhere else. It's just the buildings are now higher because it's almost beginning to look like New York.
Are the pharmaceutical companies there in force?
There are pharmaceutical companies. There are psychiatrists. There are psychologists. In North Tehran, I would tell you, there are therapists. They may even over-medicate some of their patients. But as you go south, you will get to sections of the city that are just strange. They are bizarre. They are urban. At the same time, they have a village flavor to them where, you know, prostitution is rampant. And the other thing about drugs will tell you is that now with Afghanistan, now the Taliban are gone.
It's
and they are
heroin making, city, right?
Making, beg your pardon?
It's heroin city, right?
Yeah. Now all that heroin comes to Tehran.
But again, I'm trying. I want you to focus, caller, if you can, on because we're talking about psychiatric
yes.
treatments and alternatives to psychiatric drugging, forced incarceration. How do other cultures handle it?
Okay.
Do you have any information for us on that subject?
Well, as I said, the North Tehran is almost becoming a carbon copy of this country, and they have the same issues. If you discussed it in North Tehran, it wouldn't be out of place. But as you get to the other sections of the city, which are primitive, which are urban nightmares, where then those people are just left by the wayside.
Are we stuck then with the idea of either more of the same forced psychiatric medication in North Tehran, or I don't know, zoning out on heroin and prostitution? And aren't there some cultural traditions that Iran has? And that Middle Eastern cultures have for dealing with people who are, quote, have schizophrenia or whatever, you know.
They used to be, Robert. They used to be.
And what kind of traditions were those? Were they healing traditions or were they, you think, destructive traditions?
No, you know, it's always nice to idealize about other cultures. But they were accommodated one way or the other. Either the families took them in or they became just pariahs or somehow they survived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every neighborhood had its nuts. There is also a tradition of charity there, where, you know, just people just give money to somebody who is not functional.
Panhandling.
Well, you know, and this person may go on functioning. You talk about homeless in West Los Angeles. I know a person who's schizophrenic, a black man who's schizophrenic. He has been in this neighborhood for 20 years and he survived. He sleeps on the street, and people give him money, and he's always drinking coffee and smoking a cigarette. This is a history of 20 years.
It's a good company?
It's a good company. He just walks around and talks to himself, and they call him Charlie, and he lives here. He's one of about five or six people who have somehow managed. And by the way, this man, even though he's mentally incapacitated, he's smart enough to know exactly what to do. No one is felt threatened by him, and that's why people basically let him live here.
Let me thank you, caller, for calling
yes,
in
sir.
And get you to sum up. Anything you want to say before
I... I want to tell you two things.
Sure.
One of them is a film that is actually available in this country, and you can get it, and you can watch it, and it does show people with mental problems in Iran. And it's called Women's Room. Women's Room, it's a documentary, and available from a company in New York City called Women Make Movies, and they have a website. And then I will just tell you a little joke, and I will go. When I first came here to America, and I was in Monterey, my friend used to... I had an American friend, and he would sometimes, in parties and stuff, boast that he was in the group therapy with Dr. Eric Byrne. And my view was that if somebody needs that kind of help, that person is insane. And whenever he said that, I was terribly embarrassed. So anyway, thank you for giving me so much airtime.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Dennis.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines now open again, 427-3772. We have about 15 minutes left. You're tuned to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre. I actually wore my robe today. I went to court on the issue of I'm charged with two misdemeanors for standing at the microphone in front of city council on June 14th and wanting to speak for 2 minutes on a labor issue, the issue of the IATSE union, the International Association of Technicians. And my trial date was postponed a month. Not much exciting happened. I'm going to keep you informed. We have another caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Roberto. This is Uncle Ray.
Uncle Ray?
Yeah.
Well, where are you calling from, Uncle Ray?
I'm calling from back in the cruise. I came back.
Oh, wow. You are that Uncle Ray.
That Uncle Ray,
You're the man who fled and then returned. You went to Colorado or something? Or?
That's correct.
And what have you learned? What wisdom do you have? Why have you returned to this cesspool?
Robert, I have returned to the cesspool because of my clients have requested it. So actually, I came back here to make money, and I'm doing such. But I've learned so much. I mean, taking some of the really cool aspects of Santa Cruz and then delivering it to the San Juan Mountains in the, the southwestern corner of Colorado and spreading activism. And just all of my anarchic opinions and stuff. It's been great.
Well, how does Santa Cruz look to you on your return? Any different than when you left about a year ago? Or?
No, I left last May.
That's about 3 or 4 months ago. Huh?
Yeah. So I've been about a season away. And coming back to Santa Cruz, it's really cool, but at the same time it's sad because, going into the mountain communities up there, people are really open. And even though you have, minor families that are hardcore rednecks, they're way more open than a lot of the people that I see right here that, profess to be, open-minded individuals. So, I come back here to this town, and it's like you walk downtown, and you're like, hi, how you doing? And everybody, they can't make eye contact. They can't even acknowledge you. And
well, you might be asking for spare change.
I don't need spare change. I need, millions of dollars. I mean, why fuck around with spare change?
Indeed. Well, any? Have you been listening to our show? Any reactions or any questions, comments?
No. What's your topic? I just actually tuned in. I just got here.
Oh well, we've been interviewing some anti-psychiatry activists, and I'm about to play some of my usual interviews on the street.
Uh huh.
There's a Wham Fest coming up. We had a caller talking. I didn't get a chance to really listen to him because of the other LA callers who are scheduled to call in, who has had some real problems trying to set up an alternative, I think this is what he was saying, medical marijuana facility. And, of course, then we have, hopefully, Lisa Mullineau's new Greenway Club about to open soon. So mm-hmm. There are lots of things happening.
I've actually taken that, and I've networked with people in Telluride who are kind of doing the same thing. And I've taken everything that I've learned here in Santa Cruz, and I've delivered it to them, and they're actually doing the same thing, trying to, legislate the town marshals to putting marijuana enforcement at the bottom of their list. And right now that's being discussed in the city council in Telluride. And pretty sure that it's going to go over okay because most of the people over there smoke pot and they realize that, that's not a big deal.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about?
I'm
hustling you along because I only got about 12 minutes left here.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Robert. I will get in touch with you between now and then and probably talk to you further on Sunday. But, I mean, lots of really cool things are going on there. I actually was able to go from there to Burning Man and experience the whole Burning Man thing for, I guess, it's the second time for me.
Okay.
And then I learned a whole lot there, and now I'm bringing it back to Santa Cruz, and I'll stick around here for a while. Hopefully I won't get picked up by Bechtel and the posse. And
wait a minute. CSO Pam Bechtel has been waiting for you.
I saw her, but I don't think she recognizes me anymore because, how those people are. They're not that bright.
Well, I'm not going to comment. I'll simply cut you off.
Thank
you, caller.
All right, peace, love, and I will see you on the street.
All righty.
All right.
Phone lines open for another 10 minutes, 427-3772. Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco is having its 18th anniversary tonight. So all you up there, just belly on down to the Coalition on Homelessness headquarters on Hyde Street. If you happen to be in San Francisco, it runs from 6 to 10 tonight. We have another caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I'm listening to your show, and I wanted to tell you it's great, and I thank you for doing the work that you do.
Sure.
And I'm a little concerned that you're looking at going to jail, and I'm just wondering if you could tell me, how long.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not, frankly, we don't even know if I'm going to trial, although they have set trials, so.
Do you have an attorney, or you just?
I do have an attorney. In fact, there are two people who are kind of covering it. One guy who comes down from Berkeley named David Beauvais, and then Kate Wells locally doesn't really want to do the criminal law. She's not really a criminal lawyer these days. She does civil lawsuits in federal court. She is covering a few, some of the appearances that he's not. And we are, you know, we are trying to, there's a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. I'm going to be talking more about that on Sunday. And Thomas Levitt may be organizing a protest there because it's not so much my case that I want people to be concerned about, though. Please be concerned about my case. I like that. But also be concerned about the, you know, the issue behind my case, which is city councils shutting down people who are raising issues they don't want to hear about and doing
so. Not only shutting them down, putting them in jail, but I was concerned because I had assumed that you were looking at doing, if you do any time, about a month. And someone else told me that it was more like you know, a year and a half.
It could be anywhere from no time to a year and a half.
You're kidding me.
I'm charged with two counts. It is a false arrest, actually, but I'm being charged with resisting arrest.
It is a false arrest.
Yeah, right. But they're charging me with resisting arrest, which the penalty is a year in jail and a $1,000 fine maximum. They could, you know, they can be less. And also with disrupting a public meeting, which is, I think it's half a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. If they convict me of both these charges and I don't take probation, which I probably won't because I don't believe in taking probation, because then they can pick you up at any time and haul you away on very little pretext.
And you have to live under their rules.
And you have to, you can't really be an activist under those circumstances without being ready to go to jail at any time.
Every time.
Yeah, so that's a problem. I mean, I don't know. I can't. Maybe I changed my mind on that. So we're still proceeding. I'll be giving you updates on this as we proceed. And there's not too much to tell you other than that. I've got a crappy judge named Almquist. No offense to Jeff. That's his first name. But he wouldn't allow me to make an audio tape of the recording, even though that's provided for under the California Rules of Court 980D, for those of you who like to look in the law books. And I'm not happy about that. But
no.
But, I mean, not much happened in court. But when things do happen, he's indicating he's not going to allow that. He's going to insist you buy some very expensive transcript of the court and get it that way instead of having a little tape recorder that you recorded. So.
Well, you know, you being a radio programmer, you might be tempted to play that recording.
Well, I've actually made a motion that I be allowed to play the recording because I think it's a matter of some public interest. Like how, you know, and how can an individual who goes to city council and wants to speak for 2 minutes on a labor issue be forced to spend time in jail? You know, and why should he be strong-armed by an officer before being told he's under arrest? These are the issues that, you know, that'll come up in the trial.
It sounds more like they'll drop it, but I hope that,
you would,
you
would think so, but
they drop it. I hope you don't end up going, because I spent some time in jail.
Yeah, I have too.
Really, I mean, I spent
it's a waste of time, I'll tell you.
You know, and it really does things to you.
It's not fun.
It really does things to you, and I watch different people be affected different ways in the time that I was there.
Right.
And it was really ugly and sad. And I don't think anyone really benefits from being put into that.
You know, you might want to talk about that. I know you have a show, caller. At some point.
I do have a show. And I also wanted to really, I do have a show, and it's tomorrow from 10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
But I wanted to also comment that I think, you know, the whole idea of us living in a cesspool, like, I kind of think Santa Cruz is a little bit better of a cesspool than some of the other areas.
I was kind of being, you know,
yeah,
I wasn't being accurate. I mean, I do have a lot of criticism of Santa Cruz. I wouldn't call it a cesspool. I would call it something else probably, but not a cesspool. No,
well,
I take that back.
America is kind of a cesspool, you know, in this weird way.
Well, New Orleans is now a cesspool thanks to what they've done.
Literally.
Right.
Yeah. But I just wanted to say that, you know, it seems like kind of the cesspool is pretty much connected everywhere because, you know, we've had these laws that affect people, that force people to take drugs when they don't want to. And we have other laws that won't allow people to take drugs when they want to. And we have, like, laws and on all these weird things. We have this government that doesn't do anything. We have people gathering together and trying to do something and being told that they can't and sent away by our fake government. And it's just really, it's amazing to me. And I feel like that we are in a cesspool, but I want to kind of act like we can purify it, you know.
Right.
Because I believe that with our work, we will be able to to succeed. Oh, my baby.
Yeah, let me thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Maybe folks can tune in tomorrow. And they can talk. This is at 10 o'clock. Anything you're going to be discussing?
All right.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm trying to... Phone lines open for Lowe's last-minute calls. We got 5 minutes left in the show. A couple of things. The Community Homeless Alliance Ministry of San Jose, CHAM, which is a great group. I've been arrested with them three, four, I don't know how many times, for occupying housing that actually went eventually to poor people and for demanding city council take action, which sometimes didn't happen and sometimes did. And they are having an actual conference of folks tomorrow morning, and that is that's happening. Let me get this exactly right here, if I can find it. Come on now. Oh, there we go. 9 a.m. Friday, September 9th, First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street, San Jose. Again, First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street, San Jose. They are a Christian group, but they aren't a right-wing Christian group. They're a left-wing Christian group, which I like, frankly. Although some right-wing Christian groups are, frankly, more sympathetic to homeless civil rights than a bunch of ACLU liberals who can't seem to get their shit together on even saying the sleeping ban should go here in Santa Cruz. So it's a strange scene that we all live in. Again, that's tomorrow, 9 a.m. if you get over to San Jose at 80 South 5th Street, San Jose. CHAM, Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, a three-hour conference or convention of the homeless. And so that is happening. There's just, I was going to read this, and I haven't got really time to do much of this stuff, but on Guantanamo, a protest fast is continuing, according to Agent France Press. The 87 detainees held by the U.S. military at Guantanamo Bay have begun the second month of hunger strikes to pressure authorities into adhering to Geneva Convention standards. Military spokesman Sergeant Justin Behrens told journalists on Friday that the number of prisoners on strike was decreasing, although 10 prisoners had to be fed through nose tubes, but were in, quote, stable condition. 92 was the max on hunger strike, but it has now dropped to 87, Behrens said, 10 of them being fed through medical assist. The hunger strike began on the 8th of August, when the military initially said 76 inmates were refusing food. The Center for Constitutional Rights said the strike was set off in part by alleged beatings of prisoners, denial of basic rights, and lack of fair trials. These guys have been held for 3 years with no trials. No, I'm sorry, 4 years. We're going on 4 years now with no trials. Access difficult. It maintained that lawyers have found that 210 prisoners were taking part in the strike. The Center for Constitutional Rights also said lawyers for prisoners who were on strike were blocked from meeting with their clients. The U.S. military reported 51 hunger strikers at Guantanamo in July. There's a difference between 51 and 210, I guess. A federal court late last month ordered the Defense Department to grant attorneys for the firm of Sherman and Sterling access to its clients, it said. The strike is the latest in a series that have broken out since 2002 amid protests over the treatment of prisoners at the detention center. The prison, long a source of international controversy, is located on a remote U.S. naval base forcibly leased from Cuba. The military has given the International Committee of the Red Cross access to the prison and hosted tours for visiting journalists and lawmakers, but it remains tightly controlled and largely shut off from the outside world. The most recent previous hunger strike was from late June to July 28th, according to the CCR, which maintains that up to 200 prisoners participated, almost four times more than reported by the military. In fact, from early July through 25th of July, the hunger strike became so severe that the Pentagon was forced to place 50 men on IVs or intravenous feeding, the center's report said. Medics could not manage the detention center's need and elected to stop making their regular medical calls. The prisoners spent 26 days without food, it said. The breadth and severity of the June-July 2005 hunger strike forced the Pentagon to permit the creation of a prisoners' representative committee to negotiate with prison officials concerning the protesters' demands. I hear a knocking at the door. I bet that's Uncle Dennis. So we're going. Could be the FCC, though, so I will keep you all tuned. Let's hear a little more Ann Feeney, and then we've got Uncle Dennis coming at you. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. Get up early and join me.
I come up from an acorn boat. I didn't have much to say. You'll be there to shade me. I will lift my arms to pray.
till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away.
To Barbara Wolvovich, but it could have happened to me. Her husband's name is Jules Lobel. She has a law degree, and the clients that she serves are victims of discrimination. But she joined her client ranks one day in the course of litigation. In the third week of a jury trial, the judge said to a witness, "I'm sick of all this Ms. nonsense. Tell me, are you Miss or Mrs.? And while we're on the subject, honey, let me ask you this. Just how does Mr. Wolfovitz feel about you using Ms.?" "Your Honor," answered Barbara, "I guess you must mean my dad. I am a married woman, but the only name I've had from the day that I was born, although I married Jules Lobel, is Wolfovitz. Wolfovitz, and I think it suits me well." Well, the Honorable Hubert Teitelbaum recoiled in indignation. What kind of man would tolerate such insubordination? Now my courtroom is my kingdom, and my orders will prevail. From now on, you're Mrs. Lubin, or you'll spend the night in jail. Now, Lubin was a name the judge had pulled out of thin air. Some of you who hear this may think that was unfair. But what difference does it make? That was not her husband's surname. He might as well pick Lubin if he won't let her use her name. The story hit the paper, then the hit the fan, and people started asking more about this Stone Age man. Now, who made a jerk like that a judge? Oh, come on. Who puts a fix in? It's another white male millionaire. Remember Richard Nixon? Now you might think this story is an isolated case, but misery in the courtroom is all too commonplace. So the next time that you go to vote, there's that pesky fly in the ointment. You're not just electing a president, but all of his appointments. I'm talking Rehnquist and Berger and Kennedy and Scalia and O'Connor. That one you supported. Then there's Cartwell and Haynesworth and Ginsburg. They're the ones that we aborted. Once they're in, they're only out on high crimes or misdemeanors. And with George Bush in the White House, we've been looking at the real wiener.
Thank you. way. Together.